You have a cell phone, a PDA, or anything that makes a beep besides your watch, please turn it off. Otherwise, I'll be asking you to make a contribution to the Common School Fund to help support education in Oregon for being so rude to people who are testifying today. We have a big agenda today. What I'm going to do is open a hearing, and we have a full committee now, so I'll open the full committee. I'd like to open a hearing, a public hearing on all three bills at once. We have the sign-up sheet if you want to sign up further. You've not signed up. It's over there on the left, your left, my right. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 367, Senate Bill 370, and Senate Bill 372. I'll have Ms. Richardson talk to us about what those bills do, and I know there are amendments attached to each one of them, and then we'll get started with the testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 367 requires the Department of Education to collect data on an amount of physical education provided to kindergarten through grade 8 students. It requires the department to report to legislature on the data collected by February 1, 2009. It declares an emergency and take effect July 1, 2007. The Dash Fund amendments that are before you would require this report mentioned above to be delivered to the legislature every other year. As the original bill reads now, it would only have to be delivered once. Senate Bill 370 requires students in kindergarten through grade 8 to participate in physical education for the entire school year. It requires kindergarten through fifth grade students to participate in 150 minutes of physical activity each week, and sixth through eighth grade students to participate in 225 minutes of physical activity each week. It requires school districts and public charter schools to offer physical education instruction that meets State Board of Education academic content standards, with at least 50% of class time used for actual physical activity each week. It applies these requirements to private alternative education programs and public charter schools. The Dash 1 amendments before you directs the Department of Education to award grants for purposes of meeting these physical education requirements, appropriates monies for the grants, declares an emergency, and would take effect July 1, 2007. Senate Bill 372 adds physical education to the list of subjects in the statewide assessment system and to the subjects for a certificate of initial mastery. The Dash 1 amendments before you clearly delete the physical education from the subjects that students may receive a subject area endorsement, since they would be receiving, it would be part of the certificate of initial mastery. Please note on Senate Bill 372 there are blanks in the bill on page 2 and page 4 regarding effective dates and reporting dates. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Richardson. Well, it's nice to see so many people have turned out this morning to tell us why PE is important in your life. The overview panel would be Senator Peter Courtney, Jenny Vannoy, and Jennifer Young's son. And let me clear this up, Senator Courtney. Is Ms. Vannoy your dietitian?
That's not correct. That's not correct.
So not we would not be able to find out any details, intimate details of your eating habits?
I'm a loner, and I don't go for that. It's like having a personal trainer. That's not something.
All right, so I won't tell her about that soda pop you drink every day.
Can I at least put on the record, since I suppose, to who I am? Because otherwise you're going to discipline me and say I didn't do that.
So you can do that.
And then I can frolic with you a bit.
All right.
I'm Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator, District 11, which includes portions of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn, and I live at 2925 Island View Drive, northeast in Salem, 9303. Notice how I did that. I just do lay it all right out for you. And...
So you missed the part about how you live along the beautiful Willamette River.
Well, I don't...
I was going to... That's my role, is to tell him that. The beautiful mansion on the Willamette.
I don't... I have a place on the water, but it's wanting.
It's wanting?
Yes.
For
it's,
what?
Well, it's... It's just not all that you might think it would be.
Okay.
Given who I am, my income, and my upbringing. So I'm here, Chair Walker and Vice Chair Cruz, Senator Metzger and Senator Morris and Administrator Richardson, to support the bills that you've just referred to and the Administrator has so well defined, Senate Bills 367, 370, and 372. And I've asked Jenny Van Noy, who is a certified dietitian as well as a personal trainer instructor in all health classes, as well as Nick Young, to join me because they will present. I believe there's a litany of other individuals that are going to present today from different backgrounds on the importance of physical activity and PE. While these speak to children and middle school, high school, it's important for all of us. We know that nationally, the percentage of children ages 6 to 11 who are obese has more than doubled, and the percentage of obese adolescents has tripled. In our state, and this is a figure I believe even dietitian Van Noy is going to talk about, 25% of our 8th graders are overweight, and in 2005, nearly 60% of Oregonians were obese or overweight. And, let's face it, I'm a poster child for that. I mean, you just can look at me, and I'm not happy about this, but my weight's not what it should be. Frank Morris is the poster child for how I should look, and I'm not happy about that, but that's the case. And so I'm here talking to Peter as well as trying to talk to the rest of the world, and I'm not leaving out Senator Cruz or Senator Glitzker. They can speak for themselves, but it's Frank Morris is lean and mean. If you consider the economic cost, in the year 2003, according to DHS, weight-related hospitalization cost Oregonians $781 million. That's 6% of the total health care bill. I don't know how they came up with those figures, but I'm sure obesity and overweightness, it causes trouble. I've had some health problems. They've never said it's weight, but I'm convinced that if I had to do my life over again, which I want to do every day, I wish I could do my life over again. I think if I'd have kept myself the right weight, I might have avoided some of my health problems. I don't want to go into me and my health problems. I'm just giving you an example. Whereas I think weight is an issue. It's a serious issue. We talk about smoking and drinking being issues, but I happen to think weight's right in there with it, and I think eventually we're going to probably reach those conclusions. Lack of physical activity is leading cause of obesity. Yet only 54% of our 8th graders and 18% of our 11th graders have daily physical education classes in their schools, and these bills will speak to that. And so I'm not going to read the rest of my testimony because I'm not built that way. There are some amendments. I do want to say that I'm not going to highlight the I received this phone call from Senator Brown raving about how I was in this Oregonian editorial that appeared on Saturday. Very nice, a very powerful editorial saying we should do this. But last night I was reading the the American Profile, which was in the Oregonian or the Statesman Journal Sunday newspaper. They made some statements that really alarm me. It's a national crisis, childhood obesity is, with alarming increases in the number of young people who are overweight and at a higher risk for health problems now and later in their life. One-third of U.S. children and teens, about 25 million in all, are either overweight or on the brink of becoming so. The highest number ever recorded, according to the latest National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. Healthcare advocates complain that many schools have dropped or reduced PE programs. Regular exercise is critical. School-aged children need a minimum of 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity daily, according to the American Heart Association and the National Association for Sports and Physical Education. However, only 36 states mandate physical education in public elementary schools, and only 33 states require it in middle schools. Oregon is not one of the 36, and it's not one of the 33. So with that statement, you have my written statement, and I don't like to read my testimony. You have that. I just add that statement, which last night I was doing further research on the importance of this. And with that, if you would, please, and this is just an example. They tell me that this is 1 pound of fat. That is 1 pound of fat. And I find that frightening, given how much of this is in me right now. I'm not going to tell you my weight. But if this is true, boy, oh, boy, I got serious problems. So that's just 1 pound. And then we have, of course, 3 pounds here. So it's ugly looking. At least I think it's not very attractive. But it just, I was reading, I better not say, but I'll just, I was reading, there was this article in AARP that recently said this.
AARP?
AARP.
Oh, are you a member?
I don't want to talk about it. And but it was interesting. They have this extraordinary looking 80-year-old man who looked like Frank Morris and has been that way all his life. And he gave the statement, if a bird was 50 pounds overweight, could it fly? And I took that very personally. But I got thinking about it, you know. I mean, I don't like to fly. Everybody knows that. But it's a very interesting statement to really underscore. Birds better not be overweight or they're not getting off the ground. And how that relates to adults, I don't know. But it probably, with this kind of extra on us, is a factor. And the beauty, and you're going to hear now from dietitian Van Noy, habits. This is habits. It's habits, habits, habits. And if we can start this habit when they're young, they can avoid so many of the problems I'm having and others of us are having, as well as in the healthcare area. So with that, Chair Walker, if I could I turn it over to Jenny Van Noy, who could speak from her testimony. I'm not trying to tell you how to run your committee, but we are sort of a threesome here. So if you don't mind, rather than take your questions, comments, or criticisms now, and I'm sure you're raring to go, could we at least hear from Jenny and then Vic, and then we can... You can have at me.
I think that would be appropriate because I know she'll be very articulate.
Oh, yeah. She's got some good stuff here. She knows her stuff. She's, by the way, Senator Morris, she's an OSU grad. All her education is OSU, so you should be happy to hear that. Thank you very much, Chair Walker and members of the Education Committee.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ms. Van Noy, can you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Jenny Van Noy. Good morning, Chair Walker, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of Senate Bills 367, 370, and 372 this morning. I'm a registered dietitian and certified group fitness instructor, and I'm pleased to be here this morning to support Senator Courtney, who happens to be one of my star students in cycling class down the street at the Salem YMCA. And I don't need to tell you also the class clown, so we are very entertained. So I applaud his efforts not only personally because he's very consistently in class and working at his own physical fitness, but also to ensure quality physical education for all K through 8 students in Oregon. I understand a variety of other health professionals and content experts are here to share facts and figures with you this morning, so I'd just like to take a brief moment to share my personal and professional experiences, a few of them, about the importance of a healthy lifestyle throughout the lifespan. As a registered dietitian, I do understand the epidemic of overweight and obesity that we face in this nation and within Oregon. In the world of nutrition, we often talk about an energy balance scale. So on one side of the scale, we would have energy in, the energy that we take in, calories through food, and energy out, which is our physical activity. While overweight and obesity is a complex issue, multifaceted components, very simply, that energy balance scale needs to be in balance for us to maintain a healthy weight. And the fact is, it's a simple concept, but much of the nation and the state of Oregon is out of balance. We move less and eat more in general in society. Senator Courtney already shared the statistics of overweight and obesity for both youth and adults in Oregon. We've yet to reverse that trend. We know that overweight children are more likely to become overweight adults than our normal weight children, and so we must improve health education in the schools when our children are young. Many benefits of regular physical activity, we're probably all aware of them, reducing the risk of chronic disease, improved self-esteem, confidence, reduced stress, just an overall healthier feeling when we're physically active, also helps us to maintain a healthy weight. As an exercise instructor, I see the benefits of teaching others about physical activity. Those in my classes at the YMCA are there consistently. They like being active. They feel better. They maintain a healthy weight. Somewhere along the way, most of them adults, they've learned the importance of physical activity in their lives. And I think it's important that we continue to educate children when they're young so that when they are adults, we'll see more people being physically active. Senator Courtney also referenced good habits starting early. I'm sure each one of us in this room can think of something, good, bad, or otherwise, that we still do today as adults that we learned as a child. If you'll take a moment, I'm sure you can think of something that's carried over. So we know that healthy habits start when we're young. As a nutrition educator, I have the opportunity to visit classrooms around the state and talk to children and teachers about the importance of nutrition and physical activity. And I can tell you that kids love to learn about health. They know how it benefits their minds and their bodies, and they like to eat healthy, and they like to move. They like to be physically active. I believe that our youth deserve quality, standards-based physical education in schools. It exposes them to a variety of activities and helps them identify ways that they continue to be active throughout the rest of their lives. And the end result, hopefully, then, is active, healthy Oregonians, young and old. And finally, I'd like to just remind us all that both healthy eating and regular physical activity are linked to improved academic performance. So to quote the National Association of the State Boards of Education, schools cannot achieve their primary mission of education if students are not healthy and fit physically, mentally, and socially. So if the purpose of our schools is to educate young people to become productive citizens, then the promotion of physical activity and healthy eating must be emphasized. And I personally believe that physical education is just as important as any other subject that kids learn in school, if not more so. With that, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Benoit. And I think you're right, because we as adults can sit in our offices and have our eyes glued to the computer and just work and work and work and just keep telling ourselves, we've got to get it done. But your brain kind of goes dead after a while. And unless my dog was there looking at me, knocking over my garbage can, saying, I want to go for a walk, I wouldn't get up and go do that. And when I do and I come back, the mind is refreshed and I feel like I can get more done. And so I think our next guest is probably going to tell us a little bit about how that works for him at school. Yes, if you would.
Okay. My name's Nick Young, and I go to Da Vinci Arts Middle School in Portland, Oregon. And there we actually have dance, which is really cool because I'm a dancer, and I've been dancing since I was about 8 years old. And we have PE every day, and that's really cool because it's just like kind of a break, or I have it in the morning, so it's like a way to start out the day because you can exercise, and that feels really good. And we learn about how our body works there. And, like, how if you say, for instance, that you're not going to ever be able to learn this certain move and dance, you won't, and stuff like that. But, with exercising, I think that it's good because we get a chance to move and have fun in PE and learn about stuff. That's all I can think of right now.
Well, that's a lot. Can I ask you a question, Mr. Young?
Yes.
When you're thinking you're hungry and you just want to reach for a bag of potato chips or something like that, or a cookie, or you know, all those salty and fatty things, is it more that you're just kind of bored and not sure what you want to do, and you'd rather, if you went out and did a little exercise, you'd probably do that instead of reaching for that bag of chips?
Well, I probably would have gone out before I would have gotten hungry because that's what I try to do. I try to procrastinate so much so I don't have to do homework.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah.
Okay, great. Any questions from the committee? Senator Metzger.
Just curious, is that a charter school then you go to?
No, it's a public school, and
okay.
It's a magnet academy.
A magnet, okay.
So,
and how many students do you have in your school?
About 540.
Wow.
And it just grew last year. It used to be like 350. But because of all the schools closing, they had to add a lot more kids.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
I bet the Senate president never learned how to dance.
Oh, I've seen him do some dances.
I didn't learn, but we used to have jitterbug contests in my day, and I won every single contest, every single time.
See, the thing about physical education, it sort of breeds that competitive edge in people. You just don't want to lose, do you, Mr. President?
Listen, that's not what I was saying. I love to dance, and believe it or not, and I just have it. There's something about it, and that's all I can say. It's one of the few things in life that makes me happy, and music and dancing, but I refuse to do it around most people.
All right, we'll set up that video camera. Any other questions of the committee? Senator Morse?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Perfectly fit among us?
Well, I wish I was. What you don't know, President Courtney.
I'd like to have your body.
Whoa! This is getting a little discreet.
Quote of the week.
I had the good fortune of growing up at a time when we did have PE, and we had very active programs in schools. And whether that has made a difference or not, I don't know. But I do have a serious question, if I may.
Yes, please.
I'm curious why we cut it off at grade 8 and did not include high school. And the second question is, are there any studies that would suggest that the 150 minutes plus 225 are the right numbers that would make a difference?
Chair Walker, Senator Mars, I'm just going to struggle. I don't have any expertise on the second question. I understand that John Valley and others are here that can answer that, although Ms. Van Noyen maybe will answer that. I know why I cut it off. Money. I mean, I lost this bill last session. I'm not sure I can get it this session. I'm struggling with money. And, yeah, I think it's critically important in high school. I'm from beginning to end, but I got to win this thing for the sake of the kids. And I couldn't get it last session. I'm not sure I can get it this session. So that's what I struggle with, practicality of it. That's as blunt as I can make it. I don't know whether, Jenny, you know anything about the minutes or anything, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot because I understand there are experts here in terms of that.
Yes, and I do believe John Valley is going to speak to this, but they are national standards. I know that much. And he can also speak more in depth to why it's K-8 and not high school. But what comes to my mind is some research that's been done in the area of nutrition that shows, again, relating back to establishing good habits when kids are young. So if we teach them prior to sixth grade and they establish those habits, then hopefully by the time they're in high school and they're adults, they're continuing to practice those habits. But I think John can better address your questions.
Okay. Do you have any questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Young, I appreciate that you came down from Portland today. I know there's a little bit of snow out there.
Thanks for letting me skip school.
Oh. All right.
Not skipping school. This is an educational experience.
An educational experience.
He needs to write a report on it.
And if you can go back to your students back at your school and tell them, I won the President's Physical Fitness Award. I'm not going to tell you the year, but I was about your age, and I was very competitive, and I the last leg of the whole course was running the 100-yard dash under a certain time period. I had to run that thing about 7 times to get the time, but I wanted that little badge so bad, so I did it, and I won, and I'm very proud. Even today, from President Lyndon Baines Johnson. So we'll move along here now that we've told that little story. John Valley, you want to come up with Sonia Henning and Hannah Vendering? I believe that is your next panel.
Sure.
I'd like to do 3 people at a time so we can move along.
I think the fat there.
Yeah, it's pretty gross fat. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me. For the record, my name is John Valley. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the American Heart Association here in Oregon. And proud to be a part of the coalition that is working to pass Senate Bill 367, 370, and 372. It was referred earlier that I might have hopefully some of the answers to the questions the committee members might have. I've been working on PE-related issues for the last several sessions. It's one of those issues that the American Heart Association has deemed as one of the most important in dealing with the obesity public health problem that not only the state is facing, but the country is facing. There was an effort back in 2003, people might remember House Bill, I think it was 2744, when we were dealing with SIM-CAM reform, and there was some amendments, there was about 30 or so amendments during that process. One of them was actually going to make health education and PE optional. And I remember working at that time with House Chair Vic Backlund and Vice Chair Hobson on trying to make sure that we still retained PE as part of the curriculum in our schools. And we've come a long way since that time. We worked with Senator Courtney on Senate Bill 228 last session, and these particular bills in front of the committee today, trying to address the obesity problem. You've heard a lot of the statistics of why obesity is such a problem here in Oregon, the economic costs, the worker productivity costs. The reason why we didn't include high school, Senator Courtney is right in saying that it's partly a cost issue. We had a hard time last legislative session just is getting this type of legislation through at a very minimal cost. So we thought we'd focus on middle schools and elementary schools because of some of the comments that Jenny referenced, you know, getting kids at an earlier age, developing those physical activity habits as soon as possible. Plus, when you have high school, you have some other complications with extracurricular activity sports. If you're on a varsity team, if you're on drill team, if you're a cheerleader, do you get exempted? And we wanted to really focus on elementary schools and middle schools. The recommendations nationally do include high school, but for cost reasons and complications that may be put forward through implementation, we focused on middle schools and elementary schools. With that, I'll just open it up to questions about specifics around the bill, the people involved in the coalition, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. In front of you is my written testimony, as well as a breakdown of the Senate Bill 370 amendment, which talks about the phase-in program. We met with Senator Courtney's office and the Department of Education to make sure that this grant phase-in program could be implemented efficiently at the local level. And there's a little memo that I drafted using some of the expertise the department had to help clarify any concerns or questions regarding the amendment and grant program.
Okay. Let's hear from the other two guests we have at the table, and then we'll open it up for questions. So who would like to go next?
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. For the record, my name is Johanna Vannering. I'm president of the Beaverton Education Association and an elementary physical education specialist. As I was preparing for today, I considered many options. I could share the latest brain research and show the correlation between physical activity and improved test scores. I could focus on the many obesity studies and the impact this is having on our students and our society. But I'd like to spend my time today advocating for positive change that is doable and that will make a difference in the lives of our students. Heart disease is the number one killer in America, not scoring low on the latest state test. Together, we can help lower the rate of heart disease and make a difference for future generations. Since the passage of Measure 5, we have watched as the majority of Oregon school districts have cut or severely reduced the opportunities in physical education for students. 4 years ago, Beaverton School District leaders placed elementary physical education and all other elementary specialists on a list of non-essential activities. This was not acceptable to staff, students, parents, or community leaders. With the support of all of these constituents, we were able to maintain all of these essential opportunities for our students in Beaverton. As seen by the diminishing opportunities across the state, this is not possible in all of our communities. For those who question the ability of districts to allot time to physical education, I would ask, how can we not find time in the day? I've worked on schedules for 17 years, and when you have a priority, you can always find time. Fitness of our students needs to be made a priority in this state. We can no longer sit back and allow childhood obesity to rage out of control. Research has shown that well-designed, well-implemented school programs can effectively promote physical activity and healthy eating. We have qualified physical education teachers who can and will make positive change if given the resources necessary. With your support, we can make this a reality for the children of Oregon. Programs and or requirements such as these come with a price tag. I believe we must look closely at the budget before we proceed with new legislation. Programs must be worthy of public funding. After reviewing the Senate bills before you today, I hope that you believe, as I do, that the bills before you are not only worthy of funds, but vital to the health and success of our students. Please take this opportunity to make a difference in the health and well-being of our students across the state of Oregon and support Senate bills 367, 370, and 372. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vandering. We'll hear from Ms. Henning next, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Here, and good morning, Chair Walker and members of the committee. I have a script prepared that
As soon as you state your name, then you can go into your script.
Okay, thank you. My name is Sonia Henning, and I have a script prepared of my testimony that I'll leave copies for, but I'd like to go slightly off script this morning because you'll hear many of the things in my written testimony from others. So I'd like to share my own story with you briefly. I am a former student athlete from Stanford University. I had the opportunity to play in the ABL and WNBA, and also was very fortunate to be the president of the WNBA Players Union during my stint as a professional athlete. And I am someone who went through K-12 public education. I'm currently on the Portland Public School Board and involved on the board of the Oregon Sports Authority. And so I've really had an opportunity throughout my life to not only see the benefits of sports and athletics, but also interact with young children at different points in their lives. And speaking from my own experience of PE, like Senator Morris, I grew up with physical education from K-12, and to say it had an impact on my life would be would not give it its true weight. I was a student who in the early grades was very shy, tentative, not one to speak up in class, certainly not one to want to draw any attention to myself in class. But yet in PE, I had an opportunity, like Chair Walker, to participate in the physical fitness program for the Presidential Physical Fitness Certificate. And that became a goal of mine and a dream of mine. And I'll never forget in fifth grade when I received the certificate finally, because I could do the pull-up for the 50 seconds. And that was always my challenge. I never had the upper body strength to do that. But when I finally completed it and not only received the certificate, but my fifth grade teacher mentioned it to the entire class, it gave me a sense of pride and self-esteem that I hadn't had before, and also a sense of self-confidence that I was equal to my peers. And so for that opportunity, it's something that I cherish every since the fifth grade, and the opportunities that I have now in giving back to kids, having a basketball camp. I'm amazed at the young girls that come into camp that don't know the basic basketball skills, and I can't say that I knew all the skills when I was their age either, but I was at least exposed to the ball and the sport and the game because of my PE classes. So it is certainly a detriment to not have PE throughout the K-6 system and certainly the K-12. Just another quick note on a personal experience. I ran track in high school, and up until my junior year, into the middle of my junior year, was the fastest sprinter in the state. And suddenly, mid-season, a new sprinter showed up. She was from a Milwaukee school. I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. She was from a Milwaukee school, and she was discovered in her PE class. She outran all the boys, and her PE teacher told her, maybe you should think about going out for track. Well, this woman's name is Esther Jones. She later ran at LSU and was an Olympic track sprinter for us as well, all of which began in a PE class. So I encourage you to support Senator Courtney, and I must say I didn't realize that these hearings were as festive as they have been so far this morning, but I'm enjoying it.
Only when the Senate president is among us.
But I'm here to support the three bills in front of you. I think he's done a terrific job in preparing these bills, and I do hope that they will pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the testimony of all three of you. Some of my colleagues here at the dais have had a cold, and it's drifting my way, and I think I'm picking it up. But I did want to...
I'm sorry.
I know. I'm drinking that horrible stuff, that airborne stuff. It's good for you, but, you know, it's like PE. It's good for you. Ms. Vandering, I wanted to just follow up on one thing that you mentioned about heart disease. It is the number one killer for women, I know for certain. Is it also the number one killer for men?
I believe it's the number one killer in the United States.
For all genders. And the one way to prevent that is to get some exercise,
get
correct?
Active. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mr. Valley?
Well, I was just going to say, I think one of the things that we need to really focus on, and it's great to hear Sonia's story and her experience in physical education and what it brought to her, but that in some respects, this legislation is for those students who don't excel at athletics, and that we're trying to reach those children who are obese and overweight who may not be as active outside of school. It obviously provides opportunities for people who have the ability and the talent to succeed and go further in athletics, but there's a great majority of students, if they're not getting their physical education classes at a young age, they're not getting physically active at all. and that we have to make sure that we're reaching those students at an early age, so that we are addressing not only childhood obesity, but adulthood obesity. I think Senator Courtney raised the question that this is an economic cost across the state at all age levels, that we're seeing increases in adult obesity and overweight, which causes worker productivity declines, healthcare cost increases. I think about $181 million alone we spend on health-related issues for the Oregon Health Plan and Medicaid costs. So we really need to address the other students that don't necessarily have the expertise or the talent, but still need that exposure to PE. And I think these three bills really help us get to those students.
Let me ask a question, and I'll ask my committee to see if they have any questions as well. Each session, the last two in particular, we've seen bills about nutrition in schools and pulling out junk food and thinking that banning soda pop is the answer. I don't fall into that belief that just banning soda pop and just removing candy bars or whatever is the answer to the obesity problem. I'm more of the whole wellness child picture, that you actually need to bring in the family and the community and get them involved in understanding how important nutrition and exercise is. But you also need physical activity, because I think they go hand in hand. Wouldn't all of you agree?
And I would just add to that, Chair Walker and members of the committee, that Oregon does have a model which is called Coordinated School Health, which is through the Healthy Kids Learn Better project that the CDC funds, and it's a comprehensive approach. And I would be dishonest to say that if you pass these bills, these PE bills, that this legislation alone would solve obesity. It is part of a larger comprehensive approach. We think lack of physical activity and poor nutrition habits are the two main causes of obesity, but it does take a coordinated school effort and parents at home having that kind of involvement. But we do know that PE is an important part of that process and is an important tool in getting kids more physically active and addressing the obesity problem. So this is not the silver bullet, but this is a great step forward. And actually, if we pass this legislation, Senator Courtney mentioned that some states have PE requirements, but this legislation would put Oregon far ahead of the rest of the country, because right now we're not the only state that necessarily has PE content standards that we do here in Oregon, but they're not necessarily being implemented. There's no accountability. There's no assessment of those standards. There's no minute requirements. Oregon, with this legislation, would be leading. We'd really be trailblazers. And so we really encourage the committee to pass this. And I think it's part of an overall approach of dealing with obesity, not just physical activity, but the other things that Chair Walker has mentioned.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Ms. Henning, I'm impressed with your career. You have done just tremendous things with your life, and it's so nice to know that it all started in PE class. So thank you for coming out. And Ms. Vandering, thank you for continuing to teach our children physical education and the value of it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next I'll hear from Dr. Cleveland, Julia Brim Edwards, and Jasper Lillard. Is Jasper here?
Jasper, we're not able to come to the snow.
Oh, okay. And is Dr. Jim Lace here instead? Okay. Great.
Hey, how are you? A basketball. Cool.
What game are we going to play next?
Okay, I'll start. Good morning, Chair Walker, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the PE bills. My name is Julia Brim Edwards, the State and Public Affairs Director for Nike, and an active participant on Nike's behalf in the PE Coalition. And, you know, when I heard this morning that Senator Courtney was going to be bringing his fat visual again this year, I knew that I could not let that be the last visual image you all had from today's hearing.
Thank you.
So instead of leaving today's hearing with fat, I know, it's like,
you can put it down there.
Thank you. Instead of fat visuals, think fitness visuals. And I actually wanted to bring a playground ball, but at 6:30 this morning, this is what was by the front door. So it came. Nike wholeheartedly supports these three PE bills and will be actively advocating for their adoption, as we did last session. I should add that as a parent former school board member, I believe these bills will have a direct positive impact on kids' health. These bills take the first step in restoring PE into the core curriculum of our schools,
And I think almost as important, they provide us with some measurement tools to assess this investment in PE and also the equity of opportunities for students around Oregon. All of you who were here last session, you know that Senator Courtney in the Senate stepped up and supported the legislation to increase PE. So while in the Senate this may seem like a do-over, as kids call it in the playground, we've broadened the PE coalition this year, and the need to pass the bills is as strong now as it was 2 years ago. Through a combination of in-school programs as well as advocacy and education, Nike is committed to getting kids more active and giving them the means to do it. Greater physical activity, as many of the previous speakers, and I know Dr. Cleveland will speak to it as well, improves their lives, fosters long-term healthy habits, and prevents disease. You know, government can't do this alone. That's why Nike and other partners here today, part of the coalition, have been working with teachers, parents, and community to help tackle this problem. Nike, for example, in response to what's happening nationally, has put together a multi-stakeholder initiative to address youth inactivity. It's Nike Go PE. It's a national standards-based program designed to increase the quality and the quantity of PE in schools that have lost or have dramatically reduced PE because of budget cuts or for other reasons. We deliver a custom curriculum, training, equipment to classroom teachers to enable them to teach PE. Currently, we provide training and support for teachers in more than 28 schools in Portland. This is a public issue, however, that requires a broad, deep, statewide response embedded in our schools with the ultimate goal of every child having access to high-quality PE taught by a certified PE teacher. Unlike Sonia Henning, I didn't go on to play in the WNBA, but the committee chair and Sonia, I was one of those kids who aspired to get that presidential fitness badge, and the arm hang was my always my biggest hang up that I had, but I got it. So, you know, Nike looks at this as a way to help bring PE back into schools. Working with the Department of Education, we estimate that these bills will increase physical education for about 45,000 students in the 2007-2009 time period. And these three bills provide a framework to Oregon's response to a very pressing public health issue. The Senate Bill 370 directly increases PE for Oregon students, and the health advocates and experts have talked about the benefits of that. I want to focus just for a moment on the two other bills before you, the inventory bill and the assessment bill. The inventory bill, I think, will give state policymakers a very important tool. There's a wide variation in the amount of PE offered at individual schools. This morning we heard from a student who has PE every day, which I think is the ideal. But if you talk to students just in Portland across the city, you'd find a wide variety and variation in the amount of PE that kids get. So this inventory, I think, will be an important policy tool at the state level, at the school district level, and I also think for parents, because most of us grew up having PE every day, and I think being able to look at the data objectively will really be important in terms of assessing whether we're making progress. I also think matching the inventory against geographic, racial, and economic factors will provide information on the equity about PE and the offering. I think from my own experience as a school board member and a parent, I've seen wide variations, and many of them are based on economic factors of whether kids have access to PE. On the other side, the assessment bill, I think, will, what it looks at is the minutes bill and the inventory look at the quantity, and the assessment, the bill creating an assessment tool, really looks at the quality. Nike as a business, we're always looking, and in many other fields, we value tools to measure effectiveness of programs. So the assessment bill gives us an ability to look at the quality of the programs it offers. So when you look at these three bills together, they really provide a complete package. They provide the minutes, the assessment tool, and also a quantitative tool to look at that as well. So here we have an opportunity for Oregon to lead, and we appreciate the Senate support last time and hope that you'll once again step up and provide more PE for kids in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berman-Edwards. I appreciate your testimony. We'll hear now from Dr. Cleveland, then we'll ask questions.
Thank you, Chair Walker, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Minot Cleveland. I'm an attending physician in the ambulatory care unit, the emergency department at Legacy Good Samaritan Hospital in Portland. I'm also chair of the state of the Oregon Coalition for Promoting Physical Activity. I'm here to support these bills and support Senator Courtney's continuing efforts to bolster physical education in Oregon. The OCPPA strongly supports this legislation to restore standards-based quality physical education in Oregon schools. The loss of physical education is a leading cause of Oregon's childhood obesity epidemic. I've included in my written testimony a number of statistics documenting the obesity epidemic. I won't read them all to you. I will highlight a couple since some of them have already been mentioned. In Oregon, between 1994 and 2001, obesity among Oregon adults increased 59% and diabetes 62%. The great American writer James Baldwin said, "Children have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they've never failed to imitate them." And our kids continue to imitate us as the rate of childhood obesity and diabetes, what we used to call adult onset diabetes or type 2 diabetes, is now being seen in kids as young as 10. If the current trends continue, 1 in 3 children will develop diabetes in their lifetime. If any of you have diabetes or have family members who have diabetes, you know it's a very difficult disease, very challenging for providers and for patients. Significant health disparities persist among minorities and those of lower socioeconomic status in this country and in Oregon, including higher rates of obesity, inactivity, diabetes, and heart disease. I mentioned that 1 in 3 kids today, 3-year-olds, will develop diabetes if we do not stem the tide. Well, if you're African-American or Hispanic 3-year-old, then your chances are a dismal 1 in 2. Health disparities. Risk factors for heart disease, such as high blood pressure, obesity, hypertension, high cholesterol, track from adolescence into adulthood. So if you are an overweight adolescent, guess what happens? 70% or more of the time you become an overweight adult. All these statistics are very disturbing. The one I find the most disturbing is that if the current trends continue, today's children will not live as long as their parents. Now think about that. What kind of legacy would that be to leave to our children? That's the bad news. The good news is we can do something about this because the childhood obesity epidemic is preventable through healthy eating and regular physical activity. We can make a difference in terms of reducing childhood and adult obesity and diabetes. We have to look at strategies that really work. And what's a strategy that really works? Quality physical education works. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have given it its highest recommendation as an effective strategy. Evidence-based studies demonstrate that physical education, quality PE, increases the physical activity levels of kids, it increases their aerobic fitness, and it increases the likelihood that they will be active adults, so it has a long-term impact. Quality standards-based PE will not only improve the health of our kids today, but help reduce chronic disease in the future and reduce healthcare costs. PE improves academic performance. Healthy, fit kids learn better. Higher fitness levels are linked with higher levels of academic performance. We're coming back to what the Greeks knew a long time ago, train the body, mind, and spirit together. And physical education is also an issue of fairness and social justice. No other subject or school activity has received such endorsements as quality PE from so many national and local health-related organizations. But the data in Oregon nevertheless suggests that the most disadvantaged elementary school students in Oregon receive the least amount of physical education. Kids in lower economic districts of lower socioeconomic status receive about 20% less PE than their more affluent counterparts. This discrepancy likely contributes to persisting health disparities, and we must end it. All of our children, regardless of where they live or their socioeconomic status, deserve quality PE. As a physician in the clinic, still practicing and in the clinical trenches of today's modern medicine, I can tell you that our healthcare system is already broken, and it's going to get worse. The only way we can stop it from getting really, really bad is to start investing in prevention. We cannot treat our way out of the obesity epidemic. We can't provide the care we need to provide today, and we can't pay for all the care we are delivering. And it's going to get much worse if we don't stem the tide of obesity and diabetes and heart disease. So now's the time to move upstream. It's time to invest in the health of our kids and restore quality PE throughout Oregon. Passage of these three bills will lay the groundwork for a comprehensive approach to improving PE and set us on the road to what we're calling PE parity. We had mental health parity last session. PE parity, where physical education is rightly considered as a better, core, fundamental, essential subject. I really want to thank all the 40-plus organizations that have come together in this coalition to support this these trio of bills. And as a longtime advocate for PE, I do want to express a particular thanks to Senator Courtney, who's grabbed hold of this issue and not letting go, and we really appreciate those efforts. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Cleveland. I thought your comment, we can't treat our way out of the obesity epidemic, was very telling. We can't pop a pill and solve the problem. We really are going to have to work at it. And your testimony clearly indicated that. Question from Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie, I just had a question for you. I actually also had the Presidential Fitness Badge, but mine was JFK, and I think they asked me to send it back about 10 years ago because I no longer qualified. But on a serious note, as the former chair of the Portland School Board, you know how these systems work, and I don't disagree with any of your testimony or the importance of physical education. But having been through this a few times, it's at the end of the day, as we look through the ways and means process of our school budget, and this probably would be a carve out over from the general school fund. I mean, I know it's set to be over and above, but in reality, if this, we decide this is a priority, it will be carved out separately, which will simply reduce the per capita spending per school out of the formula. So if you can kind of look back from the Nike role back to when, as a school board chair, your view on that, I mean, because I've heard from, you know, administrators in the past that say, you give us these mandates, all you do is make us shuffle the deck on the Titanic, and it doesn't really help us. And I'd just be curious as your perspective on that.
So my view when I was a school board member and my view now is there are certain things that at the state level we need to say are priorities, and if school districts or schools chose not to teach math, writing, health, a variety of other things that at the state level that probably wouldn't be acceptable, and that we as a community I think set statewide standards, and then there's a number of things that are left at the local level for the control and how those services or subjects are delivered. So I am not a local control person at all costs. I think there's great value to the state, state policymakers looking at issues and saying, as a state, here's where we want to stand in terms of education policy. And again, we view, and I viewed as a member of the Portland School Board, as PE being a critical part of our students' development, that we hope that our students leave the school system good citizens, well-educated, and healthy, and a PE is a part of that. I think the fact that you have two people from the one former and a current school board member shows there's a diversity of viewpoints within the school community about that particular issue. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, I think so. I think I guess the point I was making, and I think you made it, is that again on the local level, as a school board and members there in attendance today, you know, if it is a priority of the school board, it becomes a priority of the implementation in that school district. So, you know, part of our challenge is the fact that we have these numbers of decreasing physical education activity for our kids. You know, also speaks to, in terms of looking at the global curriculum, as you mentioned, and what is a priority, that perhaps these things become necessary because not enough school districts have made that a priority within their own local district, which is a sad commentary. Understanding their pushback is on the money, but as you say, it's also a priority of what is a core curriculum. And I just think that's important, is that not only do we dictate from maybe with these slate of bills from the legislature, what is a priority. But it's important then that those school districts and the schools within those districts also see that as a priority for implementation, as opposed to a mandate that they actually oppose, one that they embrace. I think that's a real important part. And I don't know, I would be interested to hear from someone from the School Boards Association or administrators about their embracing or not of this particular trio of bills.
Just a comment. I would say that somebody who talks to parents all over the city and sort of my region and all over the state is that I think parents are supportive of having PE and health in schools. And my experience on the school board is I never found parents or community members asking that this not be part of a sort of well-rounded, balanced curriculum that's offered to students. So I think from the parent community standpoint, it's a priority, not over other subjects, but it's a priority that it be part of the core curriculum that students have.
May I respond also?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Metzger, Chair Walker, in 2005 when we were down to legislature, the Oregon Sports Authority, who's been a partner with us now a couple of sessions, helped sponsor a study looking at, as best we could tell, what's being done in Oregon schools now. And we did find that at that time, even 15% or 20% of schools, based on about of a half response of all the school districts, but of that group, about 15% or so are meeting these standards in terms of the minute standards. That we believe that it is doable. We also think that the strength of the bills is in terms of going for funding in the grant program is that it does provide not just funding for districts to apply for funding to get more support for PE specialists, but also to provide additional equipment and to provide training for classroom teachers. I mean, most experts would recommend that ideally we would have daily PE taught by specialists, but that's not going to happen. We can't provide that now. About half or more of Oregon elementary school kids get their PE through classroom teachers now, and that's going to be reality for a while. So our bill does focus on providing additional training so the classroom teacher can do a better job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question by Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of follow up on Senator Metzger, because, I mean, adding this to 329.045, it's already there, not to this detail, but then 329.065 basically says without statewide funding, you don't have to do it. So I mean, you know, it's clearly an issue. So... And I thought I saw Senator Devlin in the room. I had some questions. I was going to wait and ask him if he's going to testify on.
He's here on the bill we're going to hear next.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll talk to him privately. But Madam Chair, it does come down to, and not that I'm not supporting this, but I think there are some issues, and they all do come down to resources, and especially when you get into students with disabilities, which is a whole other section of law, and will probably take additional resources to make sure that that appropriate activities are happening. And I would be very interested to see how $6 million is going to do this. I just don't see how, but...
Okay.
And Madam Chair, that's based on the fact that the bill says implementation next year, so... it's a short time frame to accomplish all this.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both. I appreciate your testimony, as always. And I know that at least the PE clothes of today are not like they were when I was a kid. The little blue shorts.
Some design improvements.
Yeah. Some. You would say so. Yeah, the little blue shorts, the little white shirt and white socks. And everybody went to JCPenney to get their PE outfits. Okay. We're going to have a reality check here because you've asked for it. So we'll hear from David Williams and Jim Tendall. And those are the only two remaining folks I have signed up. Was there anyone else in the room that wanted to testify? Okay. All right. Sir, why don't you come up? Come on up to the table. And have you signed in somewhere? We'll get you signed up. Okay, gentlemen, let's get moving. We want to close this hearing down about 9:30. So
So,
state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jim Tyndall, and I represent the Oregon Association of School Libraries. We are the group that supports activity and staffing in school libraries across Oregon. Our concerns are basically twofold. One, does Senate Bill 370 adequately address the whole student? And secondly, does it address the whole school community? Our organization specifically is concerned about staffing for school libraries. In the last, since Measure 5, we've taken tremendous hits across the state, and we feel Senate Bill will continue that trend, which is unhealthy for both the child and the whole school community. Secondly, we believe that Senate Bill 370 will have an impact upon all specialists in a school building if there's a finite number of dollars to fund what is K-12 education. As this committee looks at things like mentoring programs, all-day kindergarten, all the aspects that are coming before you, where will the dollars be to support the staffing of specialists in our public schools? And that's, in essence, my testimony. I'll take any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Well, we'll hear from the rest of the panel. Mr. Williams?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, and it'll probably come as no surprise that we are again here to raise concern about just exactly the issues that Senator Metzger presented about this being a statewide mandate on a school system that is frankly rupturing at the seams right now. As we look towards a record appropriation this session of $6.3 billion for K-12 education in the state, which we couldn't be more pleased about, we are again reminded that the quality education model calls for an appropriation of $7.786 billion to fully fund K-12 education in the state, and that includes fully implementing many of the PE requirements listed here. And I'm also reminded that over the past 5 years, K-12 schools have lost nearly $1.2 billion in funding during the recessions that we faced, nearly $1,700 per student. So while I couldn't agree more with the testimony about the need for physical education in schools, for the need to really get at the problem of childhood obesity and creating a healthy student population, I do want to raise that concern that simply placing a requirement on districts to add minutes of PE requires them to choose where they are going to not fulfill other issues. May it be TAG or library services or some other instance. On the school board level, as Ms. Brim Edwards testified, you don't hear people saying don't add PE. But what you do hear people saying is don't cut TAG, don't cut my library, don't cut the media center, don't cut PE as well. And frankly, it's a difficult choice that boards have had to make in this funding environment over which services to provide. And a lot of those choices have been taken out of their hands by No Child Left Behind, by 21st Century Schools Reform, by increased English and math requirements that we passed last session. There was testimony recently down in the House Education Committees about adding civics and economics and other requirements on districts as well. We just, again, raise that concern about the funding environment that districts are in today, and hope that you will consider that. I know that there are some amendments to this bill that would hopefully bring some dollars to the table, and we applaud that effort. The one concern we do have about that is that, as I understand it, the amendments would put the dollars toward districts who are not currently offering PE, so you are, in a sense, penalizing districts who are, quote-unquote, doing the right thing right now by offering physical education and directing those dollars elsewhere, sort of creating that winners and losers situation. So just a couple of notes of concern and to highlight the funding situation that districts are in today. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And, sir, you are?
I'm Tom Kelly. I am a teach exercise physiology and sports and exercise nutrition out at Western Oregon University. And just
obviously have an interest in this particular area, and wanted to come and say just a couple of things in relationship to some of the other comments and questions that that came up. First of all, I would agree with the two previous speakers. I don't envy the choices and the hard decisions that you have to make in representing all of the people in the state here. There, you get pulled in a lot of different directions, and I understand that. However, I think there was a couple of points that were made earlier that are key. If we look at education in this country, and though we have problems, we also have quite a bit to be proud of, I think. And our tradition here is educating the whole person. One of the reasons we have been such a strong nation, I believe, is because we have well-rounded citizens. Do we have areas to improve? Yes, no question. But I think, as has been alluded to earlier in other testimony, it's critical for learning that kids are healthy. If you look at things like, not to get too pie in the sky, Maslow's hierarchy of needs and some of those types of things, if kids are not healthy, they do not learn. There's a reason that the Greeks felt like spirit, mind, and body were important, and that's what we have followed in the United States as far as our educational ideal down to where we are today. And we are taking one of the legs out of that triangle, so to speak, out of the picture by taking and evaluating physical education. I would just allude to two other key points. We've been talking a lot about obesity, and I believe that's extremely important to discuss. And there's been some very good testimony about how important early changes in life are. One of the other big problems we see in our society today are problems related to bone health. Osteoporosis, especially in women, is critical. We look at, and you know, we talked about treatment of obesity. We've gained bone mineral density as a result of physical activity and nutrition choices. If you do not have that by the age 25, you are not. I mean, you've got basically your bone bank made. So the things that we do, we gain bone mineral density based on how we strain and stress bone. In other words, you got to jump around. You got to do things. You have to be active. If you don't, you don't get to those points. And, you know, we talk about costs. It ends up hitting us in the wallet in healthcare costs down the road. Those are costs that that come out of the school budgets in state priorities. The same thing can be said for obesity. If we look at some of those basic ideas, it's critical that we have the minutes that we need to for physical activity on a day-to-day basis. Senator Morse asked a question earlier about minutes and research. There are lots and lots of research studies that tell you the American College of Sports Medicine, and looking at the minutes that have been required in this bill, based on the idea of 30 to 60 minutes a day, at least 3 to 5 days a week for doing aerobic kinds of activities. I can send you some more information on the research on that if you have an interest. Again, I would just say I know you have a limited amount of time. I appreciate your funding priorities and challenges that you have. I would just urge you to be leaders and help to set priorities for districts around the state. As you fund different programs around the state, it's important that we have a balance. And I believe this returns some of that balance that has been lost. Thank you.
Mr. Kelly, any questions from the committee, from this panel? Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And first off, I fully support physical education. When I was in school, we had physical education required up through junior and high school. And it was important to me and for Ms. Henning out there, a similar story. I wanted to be a middle distance runner in seventh grade, and there was a kid in a rival school, Marshfield, who I could never beat, so I became a hurdler. His name was Steve Prefontaine. Never could beat him. And he just laughed at the rest of us. He was so good. But anyway, Mr. Williams, I guess what I would like some information on as the state has taken over education, because pre-Measure 5, it was a different world. From some districts, small and large, kind of the decision matrix that they went through when the decisions were made to cut and what other requirements were coming into place at the time that forced that decision matrix. I support this. I just want to make sure we're not doing an undue mandate on top of everything else, because at some point in time we can't continue to require more things of our education system without taking a look at all the other requirements that are there and seeing if some of them need to be taken down to a lower tier. And I think that's appropriate. The studies I absolutely support in this. It'd be nice to know exactly where we stand in the state, Madam Chair. And you know, if it's the committee's pleasure to move this, I'm not necessarily going to stand in the way. It goes to Ways and Means, but I, you know, we need to be very careful how we proceed. We have, in my 10 years in the building, required a lot of things of schools, and we continue to require more things of schools, and we cannot overburden them with so many things that they. You know, should this be core function? In my opinion, yes. But how many things are we going to require be core functions? And I think that's a useful discussion to have.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much. That's all the public testimony we have signed up. I think I'd like to close out the public hearing on Senate Bill 367, 370, and 372. I'm going to open up a work session on 367. And let's talk about that one first. So, Ms. Richardson, remind us what 367 does.
367 requires the Department of Education to collect data on the amount of physical education provided to kindergarten through grade 8 students. It requires a report to the legislature on that data. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007. Again, the Dash 1 requirement would have that report to legislature due every other year.
Okay. Let's have a motion and then we'll have a conversation about that.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 367.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 367. Any discussion?
Well, yes, Madam Chair. Do we have somebody from the department here to comment on that?
You
I'd like to ask somebody from the Department of Ed why we need to have a bill to ask them to give us this.
Could someone come up, please?
Good question.
Okay. State your
Chair
name.
Walker, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Vanderwall, Director of Standards and Evaluation at the Department of Education. I'm responsible for similar collections of data statewide and also academic content standards. I'd like to introduce Margaret Bates, who is our physical education specialist, who will address the questions, and I'll help out also if needed.
Okay, great. Ms. Bates?
My specific question is, why would we need a bill to ask you to get data? Because I don't think that takes much to get data. Assessment on the other bill is different, but just to say how many minutes a school district, I mean, every school, you know, can tell you at the end of the day how many minutes they do and can send that to the district and can send it to the department. So I'm just wondering why you can't initiate that on your own, and do you think there's a cost involved with that with the department?
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Excellent question. We, at the Department of Education, we're allowed to collect data only for those items that are mandated by state or federal law or likely also by state rule. And at this time, these data are not required. There is a cost in order to develop an appropriate collection of data, and it includes the information technology infrastructure within the department. We're very planful in terms of any data that we collect and would use the statewide data collection system, and that cost would be about, I'm cutting our cost in half because you said with Dash one, it will be collected every other year, so that would be about $160,000 for the biennium.
Okay, if I could just follow up on that
you
a
mean?
Little bit. I guess it's just I want to affirm the response you just gave, and I understand that's the case. You say you would not be allowed to ask for this data except for legislation.
Or administrative rule.
Okay.
Or federal law. So those
okay.
three.
Okay. So we need
cases.
To ask you to do that before you can do that.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I'll just accept that prima facie. But the second part of it, though, is because we've dealt with this on a number of issues, and Senate Bill 367 is pretty specific, and it seems to me, and I apologize if I don't process the same way maybe others do, but it's pretty simple. It's just the number of minutes. There's no analysis. There's no evaluation of quality. It's the number of minutes. And I would think if I could call my school districts, North Clackamas, Hood River, Gresham, and I said by Friday, tell me how many minutes they would be able to tell me how they would, I would receive from them how many minutes their schools provide. And then you have 198 districts would send it to you. It just seems like sometimes we get too bureaucratic on something. And I understand assessment and evaluation. That's a different ballgame. But the number of minutes, it just seems like, you know, why does it cost $160,000 to have somebody tell that and put it in a spreadsheet?
At one point, excuse me, Chair Walker, at one point the Oregon Department of Education was asking for data from districts about a myriad of things. And districts said, we can't keep sending you data without you letting us know when you're going to ask for it, how much you're going to ask, and being able to get back to us what it is that we reported. And so there was about 3 years ago, I believe, a process set up between ODE and districts that there will be a protocol of how ODE asks for data, whether it's minutes, whether it's how many students are in the school, whether it's how many free and reduced lunch students. There's going to be a process that we have to follow so that districts know that they're going to be asked for the data, so they need a two-year warning, shall I say, that the data is going to be requested, that they're going to have to go out and collect it, and so they have to have the people that are going to actually be responsible for reporting, then reporting it to us, and then someone it can be sent into ODE, but there has to be someone there that's going to say, and here's your collection. So we have so many data collections happening that we have to be planful about how it happens, and just calling a school district, they get angry at us because we don't have time to collect that data. You're asking me to do something new. I'm not prepared. So it's a whole process that we have agreed to go through.
Okay. I mean,
it looks to me, Senator Metzger, that the Senate Bill 372 provides the qualitative element that you want.
Well, I mean, I can understand the cost and time frame. I guess understand more than 367. Sounds like we need it because we have set up a bureaucratic mess there. I just don't see the we had the coordinator in Beaverton, you know, for physical education, and I'm sure could send us a note tomorrow probably on how many minutes that they do in each school district. It just seems like, to me, I'm going to support the bill. It's just that when people ask it, you make things too complicated, and I just think, of the three bills, 367 just seems to be an overthink of, some pretty basic stuff, but, just wanted to get that out.
Well, I'm glad you did. Thank you.
I think he feels better now.
He feels better now. And thank you, ladies, for the answering the questions. So the indication is that this now has a fiscal of $160,000 for the data collection. So what's the committee's pleasure?
Well, we need to adopt.
I've got a question about that also, though. Mm-hmm. If it's $160,000, why is that necessarily over and above their appropriation? I mean, unless we assume that everybody's work never is the same work every day and they never end projects and start new ones. I mean, is this
it's supposed to be a new $160,000 that nothing else is going to end from any staff person, and they can't take this on, and no project ends, or they need a new person just to do a project like this for a year.
Madam Chair?
Huh?
Perhaps I could comment on that. This is obviously not a Ways and Means Committee, but when this bill does go to Ways and Means, and I see Senator Devlin also.
No referral, Senator.
Oh, this is straight?
That's the conversation we need to have.
We just decided, we just heard it has money that before.
Well,
that
there's
we didn't
no
hear
referral
before.
On it, and it's now $160,000 for implementation. So if you want to speak to that.
Then this needs a referral to Ways and Means for $150,000. I mean, that's what the Ways and Means Committee is for.
That's why we're having this conversation. So let's deal with the dash one. So is everyone fine with the dash one? Is there any objections to the dash one? Okay, then those are so ordered. So approved. And so now we've got the bill as amended. You want to make a motion, Senator Cruz, and then we'll talk about that.
Well, let's talk about what the motion is going
to
be.
To get a report.
I think the motion.
You want to send it to Ways and Means?
I think I'm seeing nods from the committee that you want to send it to Ways and Means.
I'm sure I move Senate Bill 367 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, I think the motion is going to have to be
a little bit.
I think you want to do a do pass with an addition of a referral.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 367 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
That's the motion I need to hear, okay. So hopefully I can repeat it. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 367 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a do pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is everyone okay with that motion? And any discussion on that? Senator Metzger.
Well, just hope that... because I'm supportive of getting this data, I just hope that in the Ways and Means process, you know, we can find out, and Senator Morris, I know, will be on watching that, Senator Devlin as well, and you're serving on that as well, is to make sure that we don't expend additional funds that aren't necessary to get this data. I'm highly suspicious of the fact that we need to spend additional data for personnel to be able to gather this as part of their responsibilities. But
Senator, I'm sure
you'll watch that carefully.
You can count on us to ask those really pertinent questions, because I agree with you, Senator Westland.
Well, and also maybe to alleviate a little bit of Senator Metzger's skepticism, in Ways and Means, that's where we develop and process key performance measures. So in terms of just minute, I mean, maybe that can be parsed a little bit more. Now that adds additional costs, but you know, we want good data that's useful. So I think this is going where it needs to go for the full, appropriate, and robust discussion. And I, for one, will be supportive of it in the Ways and Means process. We just want to make sure it's correct and done as well as we possibly can. I think that's what I hear you saying, and I think that's part of what the Ways and Means Committee is all about.
And I think you're exactly right. So with that, we'll take the roll. Ms. Gravel?
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Westland?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. Senate Bill 367 passes with the motion that we provided. So we'll see that go to the President and likely come down to Ways and Means. So now we've had that discussion about the Ways and Means issue, because that's going to come up again. Let's open up a work session. And colleagues, we're running behind, and Senator Devlin's here on a bill that he's brought people in, so let's see if we can move quickly. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 370. Remind us, please, Ms. Richardson, what the bill does quickly and the amendment.
Madam Chair, this is the minutes bill. It's the one that requires a certain amount of minutes for kindergarten through fifth grade students and sixth through eighth grade students.
has the Dash One amendments, which set up a grant program administered by the Department of Education.
Okay, and
it does not have a subsequent referral currently.
It does not, but it does set up a grant program, which requires the funding of money.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash One amendment to Senate Bill 370.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash One amendment to Senate Bill 370. Any discussion about that? Same sort of thought process we just had. Okay, that one is so ordered. And
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 370 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 370 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means discussion. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one thought as this moves down to Ways and Means and some of the comments we heard today in our last panelists from representing libraries and school boards. Is that that's a very valid point in terms of providing funding, and I'm very supportive of this. This is extremely important. I think physical education should be a key component of all of our school activities. And but looking at, I don't think we want to get into that situation, which is inevitable of, you know, well, this is libraries versus PE or PE versus music, et cetera. And so one thing that might be considered in your Ways and Means sub, Madam Chair, is our work on the Senate Committee on Educational Excellence, which we have sent those bills through the process already, in which we are looking at funding the School Improvement Fund,
right,
so that those monies are over and above the basic formula distribution. And this would seem to me to be an ideal fit into addition as an addition into the School Improvement Fund, so it does not take away from these other programs that we do all have concerns about. And that might be a process for Ways and Means to consider.
Senator Metzger, your analysis is very accurate, and I appreciate that you all are supportive and want to send it down to Ways and Means so that we can look at it in the whole scheme of things that we have sent down there. We've already sent the Head Start bill, we've sent the School Improvement Fund, and we really need to take a look at what can we buy and where can it be most effective. I don't think any of us disagree that PE is extremely important. We'd love to have it back in our schools. So any other questions or comments? All right, then we've adopted the Dash One.
We've got a motion.
And we've got a motion, and we'll take the roll. Ms. Gravel.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
Senator Watson.
Aye.
Okay. Oh,
can we
yeah.
vote?
She got three votes. That's all she needed.
That's all I need.
Let's go home.
Oh, I'll change my vote so they can vote. I'm an aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 370 as amended moves to where it moves, the floor and hopefully Ways and Means. All right, I will close a work session on Senate Bill 370. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 372. Ms. Richardson, remind us what this one does.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 372 adds PE to the list of subjects in the statewide assessment system and to the subjects for the Certificate of Initial Mastery. The Dash 1 amendment clarifies that physical education is no longer part of the subject area endorsement since it would be included in the Certificate of Initial Mastery. It doesn't currently have a subsequent referral, and please note there are blanks in the bill.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 372.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 372. Discussion from the committee. What are we going to do about the blanks?
Well, let's adopt the amendment first, and then we'll talk about that.
All right, any discussion about the amendment? Just deletes the words physical education.
All right.
Okay. No opposition, so those are approved.
Madam Chair, we're going to have to fill in the blank and have a proper amendment to do it, so I'm not sure we can move this bill today.
You're exactly right.
So I would suggest that we've adopted this amendment. Let's save this discussion. We shall have it, but save the rest of the time for Senator Devlin. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we have done some work in the work session, so we will recess the work session. Is that what we would do?
I'll just close it
for now. And we'll come back to filling in the blanks and move this bill as soon as we get the blanks filled in.
As Senator Devlin's making his way to the dais, I just want to make a general comment about these compendium of bills, and that, you know, change is uncomfortable. It always causes anxiety, particularly when, as been articulately stated today, dollars are short. But at some time, at some juncture, you just have to put a stake in the ground and say, this is what we value and this is important. There's clear evidence as to the value of physical education. And I appreciate, I forgot the gentleman's name, but where you're saying we've got to look at education holistically. It's just not, you know, for the benefit of the individual students and what they incur. And yes, there are costs associated with this, but there are costs associated with not doing this. I mean, 62% of the increase in health care costs are directly attributable to the obesity epidemic. That's a staggering number. 62% of the increase in health care costs are directly attributable to obesity. Those aren't my numbers. That's John O'Connell's number from OHSU Research. At some juncture, you know, when do we stop putting the Band-Aid on the artery cut and actually suture the wound? It's important. And I appreciate very much your bringing these bills forward, the supporters of them. You know, this time has come. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Westland. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 479. Ms. Richardson, can you tell us about that bill, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 479 requires use of T-type light bulbs in schools as of July 1st, 2008. Requires schools to replace R-type metal halide or mercury vapor light bulbs with the T-type light bulbs on or before July 1st, 2008. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007.
Madam Chair, could I just comment?
Uh-huh.
This huge noise you hear behind you, Richard, is the entire hearing.
Obviously.
Believe me, now that you've arrived. I mean,
yeah. Okay,
could I ask you to please keep it a little quiet as you're exiting?
I like that.
Thank you. Senator Devlin, announce yourself and tell us about this bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to go through this relatively quickly. We have several people that have come considerable distance to testify here today, many that have had to make special arrangements to actually be able to come here on this day. The bill before you, Senate Bill 479, requires the removal of metal halide type R light bulbs from all public schools. The current version of the bill requires school districts to comply by July 1st, 2008. Given some of the discussions we have, we are amenable to actually changing that date and taking away the emergency clause, which actually would put the effective date at January 1st, 2009. The bulb in question is a type R metal halide light bulb, and it carries the following warning on the bulb itself when you purchase it. Warning, this lamp can cause serious skin burns and eye inflammation from short-wave ultraviolet radiation if the outer envelope of the lamp is broken or punctured. Do not use where people remain more than a few minutes unless adequate shielding or other safety precautions are used. Lamps that will automatically extinguish when the outer envelope is broken are commercially available. Particularly in gymnasiums, this creates a concern. Broken and unshielded high-intensity metal halide and mercury vapor light bulbs continue to pose a threat to eye and skin injuries. To give you an idea of some of the consequences, and there have been further reports at the federal level, in 2004, 120 teachers attending an in-service training day at Bryant Elementary School in Lake Grove went to an in-service day. In the following 60 days, teachers reported symptoms such as burning skin and eyes. Three teachers from the Lake Oswego School District were severely injured while sitting under a broken type R light bulb. Two of these women are here today, and the third is confined to her home because of the severity of her injuries caused by intense ultraviolet radiation. Following this incident, the Department of Consumer and Business Services Occupational Safety and Health Division sent out over 14,000 notices alerting schools, warehouses, and businesses, warning them of the hazard posed by ultraviolet light exposures from broken metal halide bulbs. The solution is rather easy. Type R light bulbs are easily replaced by type T bulbs. You do not even have to change the fixture. This is a type T bulb. Type T bulbs' advantage is that they self-extinguish if the outer cover is broken. They will self-extinguish within 15 minutes. These teachers were exposed to hours of exposures by the type R bulb. No one was aware that it had been broken. How it was broken, no one really knows, but you can imagine in a gymnasium in a light fixture, an errant basketball or something else hitting a fixture could easily crack or break the shield. After the DCB notice, we actually believe that many school districts already replaced these bulbs. I do know that the Portland School District replaced the bulbs. Lake Oswego actually obviously replaced all of the bulbs. It is not clear exactly how many school districts still have these bulbs in their gymnasiums, which is the most common area to have them. Our research would indicate that the average price of the type T, which is self-extinguishing, is probably in the mid $50 range. The average price of the type R is in the mid $20 range. So there's approximately a $30 difference. That is a cost. But given the potential cost of injury to teachers and children, we believe it's a cost that is worthwhile to pay for. Particularly given the potential impact that this would have in that case. When I went and met with these teachers and we went through a presentation in the very school where these injuries occurred, I only had thought about a school that I had been in a few weeks before, which actually had a practice of and had these type bulbs in it, I think, at that time, of having their afternoon daycare in that gymnasium for kindergarten students. Can you imagine? I think we should be outraged that the teachers had these injuries. Can you imagine what it would be like if you had 60 kindergarten students that had went through these injuries because it could have so easily been prevented by just simply changing a light bulb?
Senator Devlin, it's amazing to me that the Consumer Product Safety Commission has not done anything about these lights. Do you know if any complaint has been lodged with the CPSC and if they're doing what they're supposed to do, which is to protect the health and safety of Americans?
I know that there have been a number of complaints. There have been a number of reported injuries. I do not believe they have taken any action. Literally with the warnings that they're required to put on the Type R bulbs, you would think that most entities would never use them now in any area where people would be exposed.
So is there a warning on the bulb?
Not on the bulb itself, but on the packaging for the bulb.
Okay.
And I have two teachers here from Lake Oswego and plus another person to testify, so...
I'd like to hear from the teachers since we're running behind schedule, and I don't know who they are on this list, so if you want to bring them up. Okay, then we'll have three people. We'll have the two women and the gentleman here. Are you Mr. La Follette?
I'm Mr. La Follette.
Okay.
I can do a little bit of the technical, answer some of the technical questions.
Okay, I don't know.
My name is Joel La Follette. I'm from West Lynn.
Okay.
My wife, Kelly La Follette, was one of the five teachers who remain injured from this exposure to ultraviolet radiation. She is currently serving a six-month medical leave. I say serving because it is like a prison sentence. She's confined to our home. On bright, sunny days, she's confined to the darkest portions of our home. She is unable to leave except to go to the doctor's office. She suffers from constant excruciating pain and severe photophobia, which basically means she could not be in this room today because of the lights. It has changed our life dramatically. To think that changing a light bulb is a simple solution, this is common sense legislation that we're looking at here today. We can send a message to other school districts in other parts of the country and other state governments in other parts of the country that this is a danger that needs to be addressed. I've kind of got off of my statement here, but I'd like to talk about a little bit about the warnings on these lights. The FDA requires that the lights carry a warning. The problem is that in most situations that warning is on the outside wrapper, which is often thrown away before it is actually installed by custodial staff. So no one really remembers what the warning was about. In the case in Lake Oswego, the bulb was broken 2 weeks prior to this in-service training. There were several attempts to clean up the gymnasium because people were complaining of some sort of exposure. They had irritated skin for very short duration visits in the gymnasium. The in-service training was approximately 5.5 hours. In that 5.5 hours, every 8 minutes, they exceeded a 24-hour dose of ultraviolet radiation. So that's like 41 days of ultraviolet exposure in 5.5 hours. Now, the teachers that are still injured today had the misfortune of sitting directly under that light. There were approximately, I think, 12 teachers that ended up in emergency rooms that evening, several of them thinking that they were going blind. They did not know what was going on. The administration did not know what was going on. They ordered a cleaning of the gymnasium for the following Monday. They held some sort of a community event in the school gym on that Saturday. It was not until early Saturday morning that it was discovered that the light was broken and the lights were turned off. Unfortunately, no one attending that community event was injured by these lights. One thing you need to keep in mind when you're thinking about these lights is that school gymnasiums throughout Oregon in small communities are used by the community for other activities. And yes, it is important that we get these lights out so we don't hurt kids and students. But in a small community in rural Oregon, you have the potential to injure the entire community in one Friday bingo game. And so these lights, this is a very, very serious issue. I'd just like to I'll answer questions after this, but I would like to stress that the injury my wife has received due to these lights has removed a teacher with 24 years experience who has received 5 Who's Who's of American Teachers Awards. Teaching is her life. Keeping her out of the classroom is harder for her than the time that we lose together. By occupation, I manage a fly fishing shop. I host fly fishing trips around the world to tropical destinations. My life is outdoors. My wife shared that life with me. At this time, she is unable to do that. We wish that something positive comes out of this experience. If we can save just a few children the pain and suffering that we have endured, then that whole experience will be worth this. I apologize. I've created a website, and there's more information there. I will attempt to answer any other technical questions. But this is a very important issue. And please, I hope that you will support this bill.
I really appreciate that you've come here, and especially that you started a website. I take that back to another issue that I worked on, which is to get rid of wired glass out of schools. You'll see it in gymnasiums everywhere you go. The Consumer Product Safety Commission ignored us, so it took me 3 years, but with the help of a father whose son was injured in wired glass, we changed the building codes nationally and internationally to not allow wired glass to be sighted anywhere where a human being can come in contact with it. And so it takes the dedication of people who have been injured to make change happen, and I really appreciate that you're doing that.
One thing that should be noted is that the electrical code has been amended since this accident to include that we need to have more protection over these light bulbs. The problem is that those protections fail. They're not retroactive to installations that are already, being used. New installations have to have a secondary filter. What the bulb itself, what was broken on it, is that outside cover, that glass bulb that normally in any normal light that you would use in your home, when that would break, the light would go off. What's really ironic is the piece that makes that a self-extinguishing bulb, the fusible link, is a 5-cent part. And for 5 cents, companies could make a safer light bulb. Now, they're charging a lot more, And our research into it, I have found that if you're buying bulbs in bulk, you can get those for about $30. But we need to really take a serious look at the first step is removing them from Oregon schools, and then we need to look at removing them from the marketplace. The secondary market is still injuring people, and that's, you know, that's, we can't turn our back on that. But that's a battle for another day.
Well, I'm with you on that, sir, and I'll help you take it all the way. All right, let's hear from the two ladies who have joined us.
My name is Denise Flutter. I'm one of the teachers in Lake Oswego that was there that day.
Thank you, Ms. Flutter.
And should I read off of my...
If you'd like to read it or just summarize, we have the written testimony in front of us, and I think I find it actually much better if you can just summarize and tell us from
because
your heart
what's going
on. Because
a lot of what Joel said is what's in mine about that day and how long we were there. Part of what I talked about was that when we started to feel symptoms, even we were not aware of what was happening to us. I personally thought I was just getting sick, like with the flu, because I felt feverish and my eyes started to water, which... So we had no clue what was happening. As the day started to go on, we knew there was something, and the custodial staff, the administration, there were several administrators there that day. Nobody knew what was happening, and nobody thought that it was that big of a deal, really. It's also scary to me to note that I think we were there about 5.5 hours, but we continued to burn long after that. I don't think I hit my worst until about midnight. Mm. I have 3 young children at home, and I had already set up that day that my husband was going to pick up the kids, which was unusual, so that I could get some extra work done after the in-service. So even though I felt bad, I went to work, continued to work at my own school, and I didn't leave. I actually talked to Kelly and Mary, and we were all saying we're just getting worse. So I headed home. It was dark. And I did not realize that my vision had been affected until I got on the freeway and all the lights started to run together and I got into a car accident, which I hadn't even ever had a speeding ticket. And to hit somebody, I was terrified of what was happening to me, still did not know. My husband took me to the hospital and no doctor that tried to help me that night. I think I was the first one to go to the emergency room probably because of the car accident. Nobody knew what was happening. So the danger is unknown. You know, even if it's happening to you, people don't know. They kept insisting that I had pink eye. I knew I didn't have pink eye. It's a common thing that children get, and probably every teacher's had it. But they still prescribed the medication for pink eye. That's what they sent me with, and painkillers, because they could tell how much I was hurting. By the time I got home, I couldn't see. About midnight, I could not see. We were told at first that we would be better within 24 hours, and then they extended that to 2 weeks, and then they said 2 months, and now it's been over 2 years. And my life as well has been greatly, greatly affected. My family is also very much into the outdoors. I forgot the fishing part in my testimony, but we would fish. My husband fishes every weekend, and now he takes the kids without me because I can't be out in the sun that long or near the water that's reflected. We have a swimming pool in the backyard that I would spend so much time out there with the kids, and now I can't because of the lights. Air conditioning, when it gets winter, I like the rain because it, you know, it feels like moisture, but then the heat comes on in the house, and that hurts. In the summertime, the air conditioning hurts. The fans hurt. We can't use. We have a beautiful wood stove in our home that we can't use because it dries out my eyes. All of these things that I never thought about before affect my eyes now. Reading hurts my eyes, and so all I can do is read for my job, and I cannot pleasure read at all until the summertime I try when I don't have papers to correct. I've had to give up reading to the younger children because it hurts so much by the time I get home at the end of the day that now my husband and my older daughter do that. But that really makes me sad because it's an activity that I love doing and I think is very important. All of the other outdoor activities that would involve air rushing by my eyes or being in the sunlight hurt. So to water ski or snow ski and all of those things are gone for me right now and have been for 2 years. And I just, I guess I'd really like to leave you with the thought that nobody knows about this. The doctor, our doctor that all three of us have, has gone above and beyond to try to figure out how to treat us. But he's had to come up with, there's been no precedence, because I don't know that anyone had ever been burned for as long as we have. But Joel was right. These gymnasiums are used for more than just PE class that goes for 30 minutes at a time. And so the danger is so strong. And if you're in the situation, you don't know what's happening. So I think that what we need to do is make sure that the lights can't be there.
Ms. Fletcher, you're telling me that your doctor doesn't quite know how to treat you because this hasn't happened before. They have no idea how long this condition will stay with you?
He says he's still optimistic that we will recover.
Okay.
I'm not.
And that means protecting your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Lots of eye drops, all different kinds of eye drops at different times of the day, and protecting from mm-hmm. the lights, and just trying to avoid, I think that's why Kelly is on leave right now, is trying to avoid any activity that would, it's like we're on a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I will feel better, and then I go bad, good. And right now is report card time. So I can't put off the reading that sometimes when my eyes start to hurt, I'll say, well, I'll grade those later. And when mm-hmm. it comes time to report cards, you can't do that anymore. You have to finish. And so this is a bad time for me right now, okay. which is probably because of that time. And I also, I don't know, Joel, if you mentioned this, that I believe that there are more instances of it happening, but people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Something may happen, you go to the doctor, they don't know what's happening, they treat you for something else.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Let's hear from Ms. Bohr, because we're going to run out of time here, and I okay. certainly want to hear your testimony.
My name is Mary Nierhout Bohr, and I'll try not to repeat what they do. I just want to say that my experience was very similar, except that I woke up at 1 a.m. In extreme pain because the moonlight through my eyelids was too intense for my eyes. And I had never owned a pair of sunglasses before, and all I could think of was sunglasses. And I stumbled out to my husband's car and got his sunglasses, but the continual burn was happening. The doctors at the ER had to put in special drops to relax the eye, just enough to pry it open, and they asked if I'd been using a welding torch without eye protection or up in the snow without eye protection, because the symptoms seemed like snow blindness. They said on further examination that it looked as though sand had been thrown in our eyes, and each grain of sand had burned through several layers of the eyeball. And when we say our eyes get better and worse, it's because your eye sloughs and repairs itself. And some weeks I'll grow an eye that has only 20 holes in it, and the next week I get lucky and I only have 15 holes, and then, you know, later I'm back to a bunch of holes. So that's why it comes and goes. The mere act of reading is painful. I haven't read a book for over 2 years, which when you're a school teacher is saying a heck of a lot. Since they've covered what I just want to mention a little bit about the treatment, because if you can picture kids having to go through what we go through, just brought some visual displays. Like I said, I've never owned a pair of sunglasses in my life. Sunglasses make me physically nauseous. Some people are like that because of the bend of them. But I now have at least 10 pairs of glasses that if I leave the house without, I have anxiety attacks, because some are for driving at night. The headlights of cars feel like a dull needle boring down through the middle of your eye, and all you can do is clutch the steering wheel and continue on with it. So you have your sunglasses, and then hats, which I look particularly bad in. I've got so many hats, it's unbelievable. But I wanted to get to the eye drops, because this is where, this will show you what our regime is like. This is a 1 month supply of eye drops, and some months this isn't enough to get me through. And they all do different functions. This one is for swollen eyeballs that no longer fit in our sockets. So I get Neanderthal headaches, I call them, because the eye is too big, which means I have to put these drops in probably 4 to 6 times a day just to keep the swelling down. I don't even know what half of these do. This is the only one that helps at night, because it contains oil that my eyes no longer produce. Our glands were destroyed. So the in-office procedures that we go through are having our tear ducts plugged, which is a very unpleasant procedure to go through. Are we okay?
I'm sorry. We have a problem here. What's
Can we get a doctor?
We're going into recess.
back in order. It is 10:20. Folks, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to adjourn the hearing for today. We so appreciate your testimony. And there was only one other person to sign up, Larry Wolf from the Oregon Education Association. He can come back. I believe the intent of this committee is to move this bill. I just so appreciate what you've come to testify about today. So thank you very much. All right, committee.